This is Bentic, the Atari 8-bit podcast.
Even just, running tight machine language loops, it barely could keep up with that kind of rate and pull in samples from the scan lines. That same signature from the very first scan, literally the very first scan that was done by the prototype initial product, literally that same image was used to sign the company's checks for a half a dozen years.
This is an interview episode of Antic, the Atari 8-bit podcast. I'm Kevin Savitz. Dave Pratt was founder of Digital Vision, the company that made Computerize for the Apple II, Commodore 64, and Atari 8-bit computers. Computerize was a slow-scan video digitizer that plugged into the joystick port on the Atari version. You'd connect a video camera or VCR into the Computerize box, and software on your computer would create a black-and-white or grayscale version of the image on the computer screen. This interview took place October 12, 2015. After we did this interview, Dave set up a nice website with a history of digital vision and photographs of the early products at www.digital-vision.inc.com. You can check the show notes at ataripodcast.com for a link there.
So I would like to know, let's start before the beginning of digital vision. Tell me the story before the story about how you got to be interested in computers and video digitizing, and kind of give me the prehistory, please.
I shall. Here's the story. So I owned an Apple II computer, and I had written a program in it, like a lot of people did, to balance your checkbook and categorize expenses and do all that kind of stuff for home personal finance, and it printed my checks out, and it did everything except sign my checks. And so I started wondering, well, how can I get it to do that? And then I kind of came up with an idea of being able to point a video camera at my signature and somehow getting that into the computer, and then I'd have it and it would sign the checks. So came up with a circuit and some software to do that. And it worked, and it plugged into the Apple II's game port. And when I got it all done, I got my signature all scanned and everything, and started printing my checks with it. I realized that this could be a product, and the parts cost was pretty low, and so I went through the numbers and. It looked like it should work, and so I quit my job, and I took a little bit of office space, and I hired an assistant and started building these video capture gadgets for Apple IIs.
So you designed this thing yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I'm an engineer by background, as you recall, what computerized was, at least in the early going, was not a frame grabber, but it was a slow scan digitizer. It would take several seconds to scan an image, which for scanning my signature is perfectly fine. And the way it did it, not to give away any trade secrets. These processors back then were by today's standards, crawled, and so could not accomplish much in a given period of time. And so there's no way you could get the computer to bring in a whole frame's worth of video information. So what I did was I took one sample off of each scan line, and then I could do that through a column's worth of pixels. I could capture that in real time, but then I would slide it over just a little bit and could capture the next column over and keep sliding over until I got enough columns to fill the entire frame. So I got a row of pixels every 60th of a second. And then depending on how many columns I wanted, typically 640 or 320, dictated the amount of time that it took to complete the whole scan, which worked out to be like 6 seconds to do a scan of a video signal, which means, of course, that the signal has to be stationary, either a camera pointed at something, video camera pointed at something, or VCR on pause, but that did require that the VCR has a significant enough, stable enough freeze frame capability. And the initial product, forget about color, but forget even about grayscale. The initial product captured an image that was black or white, not black and white, black or white. It was either above a certain threshold or below a certain threshold, and if it was above the threshold, it was white, and if it was below, it was black. And so to do a signature, it would take the signal from the video camera and decide whether each one of the elements was above or below a certain threshold, and call it black or white. Now, this perfectly matched the computers of the day. The original Apple II had no shades of gray. Never forget about color. The early PCs had no shades of gray because they were more business oriented anyway. But then a little bit later, the Atari 8-bit Atari came along, the Commodores came along, and they had a little bit better graphics capability. And so what I was able to do was to take the product, which basically thresholded the video, and by changing the threshold and using multiple scans, I could get something like 8 shades of gray. And the Atari actually was a good match for that because it could do 8 shades of gray. And of those three computers, the Apple II, Commodore 64, 128, and the Atari, what were they, 400, 800?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Ataris gave the best image because they could do those shades of gray. But the way it was done was by taking multiple scans. So now we're talking, 8 times 6 seconds.
Right.
upwards of a minute to do a full scan of an image with 8 shades of gray. There were other products out there to do it faster and with more shades of gray and later on with color, but they cost a whole lot more money. that was kind of our goal is to produce something that everybody could afford.
Right. So at least the Atari version of Computerized cost $129.95.
Right. Exactly right.
Yeah. What did it cost to produce? What's the value of the parts in there?
Value of the parts was around $16.
Uh-huh. Nice.
But that's not atypical.
Sure.
There are a lot more expenses that go into a product. And the cost of the parts, the packaging, the marketing, the overhead of running office and lab space, insurance, going to trade shows, all of that.
No, I'm not criticizing. I was just curious.
No, that's what it was, and that's what inspired me to turn it into a product because those numbers work.
Were you building these things by hand? Did you find a factory somewhere?
The initial ones, I love telling this. So I initially took on a suite of 2 offices, and my assistant was in one, and I was in the other. I had a desk and a table for a lab bench, mm-hmm. and she had the desk where she would answer the phone, do various office tasks, and in between phone calls and whatever else, solder together the first 100 at least versions of the Apple II product.
Wow. Nice.
After that,
I want to see the job listing for that. Like, you need to be able to type at 50, 80 words mm-hmm. a minute, and answer phones, and know how to solder.
Yep, soldering skills. Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
I may not have told her that was part of the test, but she took it. Incidentally, this same woman stayed with the company all the way through and became an excellent office manager. And she was my right-hand person all the way through. And so, it worked.
Nice. All right, so I interrupted you. You were going to tell me a story about something, and I interrupted you. She was soldering at her desk between answering phone calls.
Oh, that may have been it. Just the fact that she the same person answered the phone, sent out mailings, prepared advertising literature, and soldered the parts together.
So okay, after the first 100 or so, you found a facility to build these?
Yeah, I mean, I had worked for a company prior to leaving and starting Digital Vision that made digital array signal processors and hired those to be made. And so I contacted the same person and started having them build products, and they also stayed with us for a good dozen years, doing the second, although starting with the second 100 Apple II products, all the way through the end, which was 12, 14 years later.
Yeah, nice.
And so, I mean, they were big enough that they could handle whatever volume we threw at them.
So how long were you churning out Apple II units before you decided to go with Commodore or Atari or whatever came next?
Well, I was thinking last night. I couldn't quite remember the time frame. Digital Vision started in 1984. And the second product was Commodore. The third was Atari. And I have in my basement that I haven't looked at for years and years, what we call our Digital Vision archive box. And so I dug it up this morning. And it has examples of several of the products. I thought maybe all of them, but I could not find an 8-bit Atari version in there. But I did find the owner's manual.
Oh, nice.
And the owner's manual is dated 1985. So, and it was the third of the versions. So they're very similar. The basic architecture is the same. The Apple II version plugged into the Apple II's game port. The Commodore version plugged into, there was a parallel port on the side of the Commodore box, which I think was mainly a printer port. Mm-hmm. And in for some reason, for the Atari, I used the two controller connectors.
Right.
The and it must have it must have been that the signals available on the there weren't enough signals available on one of the connectors to be able to connect it with just one. So I had to use two of them. Hmm. Either that or I got a little bit better performance by using two or something like that. But anyway. But inside the box, with the exception of the interface to the outside world, inside the box was pretty much the same.
Interesting. Just the connector out from the box would be different.
Yeah, and software.
Sure.
Another thing that made this possible is, I mean, even to take only one pixel per scan line meant that the processor had to, scan lines go occur every like 60 microseconds or so, and that's not that many instructions for what was the processor? The 6502.
Yes,
was the processor. Mm-hmm. But that's not that much time. And so it was even just running tight machine language loops. It barely could keep up with that kind of rate and pull in samples from the scan lines, but it did. So the software running was an integral part of the products, no doubt about it. The more you can put, the more burden you can put on the software, the less and less on the hardware, the less the recurring costs are.
Right, sure.
Because they're in the hardware. So the software certainly was different. At the lowest level, not too much different because it was pulling in the samples and putting them somewhere in memory. But at a higher level, namely the user interface, you know, things were different between the three computers.
Did you write the software yourself too?
Yes, back then I did. I did everything.
You did it all.
All the technical. Yeah. The family turned out to be the company turned out to be a family-owned business. My brother, who also had an engineering degree, although it was chemical engineering, joined me at the end of 1984, only about 6 months into the Sorte. And then my wife, who also had a technical background and also a financial background, joined me in early 1986. And so it was a family-owned business. And the business never grew very large. We didn't want to bring in outside funding. We didn't want to go for venture capital. We didn't want to go. I've seen it happen. I was involved in the past. Didn't want to go that route. And so I'm sure, you know, there's no question that we limited the rate at which we grew. But, you know, it worked for us. And it was a happy experience all the way through. And our company, which grew to be somewhere around 13 or 14 employees total, it was like a family. It really was, like working with, in a good sense. Families don't have to always. it really was a great bunch of people, and we were all kind of in it together. And so it was just a nice experience that lasted, especially in the technical world, quite a lot of years.
Did it remain a family-owned business? I know it went on for the company. Survived much longer than the Atari years, and you were eventually making PC-based frame grabbers and stuff. Was it always a family business?
That's right. After the the 8-bit Atari was the third Atari product, and around that time we hired a technician who was an Atari guy, but he was getting into the Atari ST. Mm-hmm. And he convinced us that he could, write some code to run on an Atari ST. And we said, okay, we'll let you do that as long as you do a Macintosh version for us too, because they also share the same processor, Macs and Atari STs. So that was, that was a pretty relatively straightforward carryover between the two there. And as you might expect, we sold a lot more of the Macintosh product than the Atari ST products.
I can imagine.
Just because of the numbers involved. And then after that, I don't actually remember the relative timing, but I had to do an IBM PC version, of course.
Mm-hmm.
they were getting rather ubiquitous, and so we did. And I actually hired a guy that I knew who was a PC programmer, and he did the software for us. And in terms of the low-level processing, he did a fine job at that. But I remember the first review of that product that we got in one of the PC magazines, maybe PC Magazine. The reviewer said something like, you know, love the product, works great, does everything it says, but the user interface reminds me of my first BASIC program. and he was right. It did. Because the guy didn't have a feel for stuff like that. So that made me learn how to program a PC. Much to my... I know. But hey, it paid in the end.
Good.
And then color versions came along, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, our products just kind of evolved along with the graphics capability of the computers. The IBM PC, its VGA graphics had a couple different modes. The one that gave you the best images could do 256 colors on the screen at any given time, but mm-hmm. with a resolution of 320 by 200. I remember thinking and saying at the time, you know, does it ever have to get any better than this?
Yeah, not going to get better than that.
And, of course, times have changed.
Yeah. I saw a graphic recently, and it was kind of a relative graphic of a current Mac Retina screen with, in the middle, was a little dot, which was the relative size of the original Macintosh screen. It's just like a little speck in the middle. You know, you could just see like it's. You could fit like, you know, a million of them inside or something.
I believe it. Yeah.
All right. Well, since we're moving forward, we're going to jump back in a minute. But how? So okay. you're coming out with PC based frame grabbers, and the company is no longer exists now. Correct? I mean, Digital Vision is shut.
That's right.
How did it come to an end?
Sorry, now we're jumping to the end.
Well, is there more in the middle? I mean, I'm
oh, well, no, I'm
we're,
sure
we're jumping to the end, and we're going to go back. So I'm just trying to.
All right. Let's see. It got to be the early to mid '90s, and we were starting to see things happen. We, meaning my family members and I, we're starting to see things happening. You know, a lot of competition from Asia. Digital cameras starting to come on the scene. You know, just a lot was happening, and we thought it might be time to, you know, look for buyers for the company. and we had set a goal to retire at age 50, and made it. So We found buyers, and we found it turned out to be a pair of gentlemen. One was a VP of operations at Polaroid Corporation, and another one came from the investment banking community. And they pooled together some resources from their friends and took over the company from us slowly. It was kind of gradually. We stayed on and helped them make the transition for quite a while. But then kind of the things that we sort of saw coming kind of came to happen. And, the sales started flattening out and so on. And they ended up selling the company to essentially a competitor on the PC side, which often happens. And the competitor basically took the better products, the products that were selling the fastest of ours, and scrapped the rest and closed down. But that was after a good long run. It was after a long run of 13 or 14 years, I guess.
Sounds like you got out at the right time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, going back to the Atari, Commodore, Apple days.
Yeah,
I have some questions there. So I was rereading reviews of Computer Eyes, and one of the criticisms that I saw of the software was that it would capture an image and then save it, and that was about all it could do. It couldn't manipulate it in any way. And there was, I think, a quote from you saying something to the effect of, oh, the users are going to come up with things that we haven't even thought of, and they're going to create this great software and do amazing things with it. And so I'm wondering, did users create tools for Computerize that you hadn't even considered?
Well, I mean, I'm surprised I said exactly that. I think what I would have more said was that there already existed software out there that would make good use of the images that we captured. I know that on the Commodore side, there were a couple of good paint programs. One was called, in fact, what got me thinking about the Commodore was that one of our distributors was selling at the time more Commodore equipment than Apple II equipment, and so it convinced us to do it. And they also represented a product called FlexiDraw, which was a light pen kind of thing that worked on the Commodore screen. And FlexiDraw was a paint program combined with the pen, and there were also paint programs. You'll have to provide me, refresh my memory, paint programs on the Atari side. And so what our thinking was that we would draw the line, we would capture the images for you and save them to disk. And then and some people just want to print them out. Some people would bring them into, for example, Print Shop. Isn't that the name of it?
Yes.
Print Shop. To, you know, create cards and things of that nature. And then to do any sort of manipulation with them, that's what the paint programs were for. And I guess we kind of thought that we'd be, you know, trying to reinvent the wheel if we were to come up with, a paint program or something like that of our own. I mean, I can certainly understand the criticism. I mean, it would be nice to have everything in one package. I can see that.
I found a quote from you from June 1987 where you said, "We would have brought out the Atari conversion much sooner if we realized how fast sales would take off compared to the early earlier Commodore and Apple II editions. Atari users seem to be heavily into graphics." So
yeah.
Given that, I'm wondering about if you can give me an idea about the relative sales for those three different platforms.
Apple II by far was the biggest seller.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, we penetrated the education market to quite a great degree with that product. A lot of the trade shows that we did weren't necessarily computer shows, but were educational shows.
Oh.
And so I back in the early going there, I would say that almost half of the trade shows that we did were education shows. And, you know, the educators were definitely using the Apple products then.
So you were selling these to schools for use in labs or what?
Yeah, I mean, labs are art departments. A lot of schools, they would buy them on the overall general school budget and then make them available to the different teachers, the different classrooms for, I'm not sure what, experimenting. I mean, it's as opposed to a lot of products, you know, like, you know, you take on the other end of the extreme is like DizzyCalc, you know, a spreadsheet.
Right, right.
You know. It's a fun and it's a very visual kind of thing, and it's a perfect thing to go to any type of trade show with, because you're there in your trade show booth with a camera on a tripod, you know, set up, and people walk by and you scan there. In the early days, of course, they had to hold still for 6 seconds.
Right.
But you'd scan their image and put it up on the screen or print it out on a printer. And like compared with a lot of things that that people were trying to market for computers, because it was so visual, it was just a natural for that kind of environment.
Sure. Yeah. So did you ever,
it's just kind of a fun product for people to have.
Yeah.
for all kinds of things.
Absolutely. So did you end up using it to sign your checks?
Absolutely. And in fact, I wrote a version of that initial financial software for the company, and the company used it for, I'm going to say, 6 or 7 years before we actually went out and bought a full-blown accounting system, $5,000 or something. And for 5 or 6 years, that same signature from the very first scan, literally the very first scan that was done by the prototype initial product, literally that same image was used to sign the company's checks for half a dozen years.
Nice. Amazing.
I think I still got that file somewhere on my computer. I'm sure I do.
Nice.
I'm sure the file format. Although, I can't remember what the file format was on an Apple II. I mean, Commodore was, GIF files. And they're still around.
All right, so what's in that box? You said you found a box in the basement. I want to know what's in it and and what needs to be scanned and digitized and saved for history.
Well, I have to admit that since I dug the box up, my wife, by the way, is still with me, also known as the Chief Financial Officer and VP of Sales, I think, for Digital Vision. We kind of quickly went through it together because we didn't have a whole lot of time, and we came to the same conclusion. We've got to scan this stuff. There's a lot of good stuff, a lot of photos of the company we moved twice, by the way. The company moved from our two offices in Needham, Massachusetts, to we actually bought a small building, freestanding building, in Dedham, Massachusetts, but we outgrew that and took some regular commercial office space also in Dedham, Massachusetts. So we did those. We moved twice to start. And so there's a lot of photos of the company in all three locations. And I'm pretty sure I've got examples of all the product literature in there.
Oh, nice.
And several of the physical products. There's one, I forget what model of computerized, but I don't remember which one, but it was one of the early ones, the one like you're familiar with in the black box, that came back as undelivered by UPS. And the reason it was undelivered because the UPS truck had literally run over the package. and it was flat as a pancake. And we did get credit for that. But we kept that package unopened. Still have it.
Nice.
But you're right. I'm going to scan all that stuff, take photos of things and put it up on a website.
Yeah, if you do that, I would super appreciate it. And I will link to that from the interview. And if you don't have time, of the interest, you can lend them to me. I will scan it. I've got two scanners on my desk, and I can take care of it and get it all back to you. Because the retro computing community would certainly love to see the manuals and the pictures of your offices and that sort of thing. That's super cool.
Yeah. Well, and so did I. I've known all along that it's been down there, but literally, it's the first time in years since I've gotten it out and looked at it, and I only gave it a cursory glance so far.
Yeah.
I must be. I mean, I must not have even. These days, websites are one of the things that occupy a large amount of my time. And so for me to do that would be a piece of cake.
Cool. Awesome. And if you find any floppy disks with any media, I can transfer those to modern computers. Say you found a disk of the source code or something. That's easy enough to.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I even have a 5 1/4 inch drive in the house here anywhere. never mind which computer it might
right.
be for.
Yeah. So yeah, if you find it, let me know. What haven't I asked you that I should have?
I don't know. It does seem like we've covered kind of most everything. Let me think. Well, I guess one thing is that the company went in a slightly different direction about halfway through our existence in terms of computerized. The name Computerized, by the way, mm-hmm. was a pun that was given to me by an engineer, as you might expect, as a gift. An engineer who I was working with at the time when I left my job to start the company, and I was telling a few of my friends what I was doing, and the guy came into my office one day and said, "I got a name for your product." He said, "Well, what's that?" Computerized. EYES. Get it? Yeah. and so it stuck. And the only problem we had with that is that you had to be careful with the graphics, because if you just sort of spell it out, it could be read as computer ES or something like that. So you have to differentiate the I's from the computer itself. So, what led me to that was the fact that we developed another line of products that. Kind of the reverse. Instead of capturing video into a computer, we would take anything that was on the computer screen and send it out to TV or a VCR. Now, the earlier computers, our Ataris and Commodores and Apple IIs, talked to TV sets anyway. That's how the TV sets were their display. But once the IBM PC came along, for example, there was no such thing, and they always had their own monitors, VGA monitors, and so on, and the same with other computers that came after that, because after all, the resolution you can get on a TV screen is limited for computer use. So, but there's still And so you could take the signal from your Atari, you've probably done it, and send it to a tape recorder and tape it. But you couldn't do that with the later computers. But there was still a need to do that among some people. And so we came up with a line of products called Televise. Get it?
Yeah, EYES again, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. As I said, did the opposite. Would take a VGA computer screen or what's on your Macintosh or Atari ST, and send it out as a video signal that could be displayed on a regular TV set or recorded on a VCR. And there were several models of that. Some of them got kind of fancy that included the ability to overlay graphics you could do the Roger Rabbit effect.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
That was the whole second product line.
Nice. All right. So you told me you created this thing and it worked right out of the box and everything was fine and you created the Apple version. I feel like there must have been. I want a story of a problem that you had coming along, in creating these 8-bit products. There must have been something that didn't work right, or a bad review, or tell me something that was frustrating, or something when you were during that time.
Huh? Maybe I've suppressed all of them. I mean, obviously, the reviews would vary. Generally speaking, people felt that they were a good value for the money, and they certainly were an unusual different sort of product. That happened. Worse than the truck running over the... I don't know. It was a good ride. It was a really good ride. I mean, to start the company, we took out a line of I went around with a business plan to a couple of banks, and nobody would sign on. So we didn't get any, we didn't borrow any money that way. So we just took out a loan against our house and just a line of credit against our house, and we only went into it by about $15,000 before things started turning around and the company became profitable, and we were like back to break even by the end of the first year. We didn't take risks. There is such a thing as risk reward. So I'm driving Alfa Romeos and not Ferraris.
Gets to my next question. I was going to ask what you do today.
My brother and my wife and I retired at age 50. Well, I'm the oldest. So my brother was, and my wife the same, and my brother is 2 years younger. So we retired at that age. And, retirement is not for everybody, but it works for a lot of people. And so I do a number of websites for a bunch of different organizations, including the New England Alfa Romeo Club.
Nice.
My wife became an artist, and I do a website for her, and also a number of her artist friends, and a bunch of other organizations. And I brew all my own beer, and so I do a website for my beer supply store, and I bake bread, and I put up pickles, and I roast coffee. I just kind of enjoy things.
All right, I think this will be my last question. If you could send a message to the 8-bit people, Atari and Commodore and Apple people who used your products back in the day, and some of whom are still out there playing with Computer Eyes, if you could send them a message, and you can right now, what would you tell them?
First, I'd say thank you, everybody. Thank you for purchasing our products. And I don't know. I mean, even I enjoyed using the damn thing. and I hope you did too. And we had a good ride. Thank you for riding along with us. And weren't those the days when, for one thing, we could get our hands on our computers and really get involved with them and program them at any level that we want, and we can it's like old cars. They're certainly not as good as the modern ones, but they were understandable and enjoyable and fun to work on. And I think the computers are kind of the same. That's my message.
That's a good analogy. Cool. Thank you so much, Dave. I appreciate your time.
Okay. I'll try to get back to you with some relics.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, you know where to find me, and I will make sure that the community sees them. Cool. Thank you so much, Dave.
All right, Kevin.
Have a great day.
I enjoyed it. Take care.
Bye.
If you enjoyed these interviews and would like to contribute something, I encourage you instead to donate to one of our favorite organizations, the Internet Archive, at archive.org. The Internet Archive is a nonprofit digital library with the stated mission of universal access to all knowledge. They've done incredible things to preserve computer history, including hosting thousands of programs in an in-browser Atari emulator, creating the Wayback Machine, and offering full-page scans of countless Atari computer books and magazines. Make your tax-deductible contribution at archive.org/donate.